Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, one and all, for coming today. It's always wonderful to be in a room with, is everybody book lovers here? We all love books. And, well, it's always to be in great company. So today I'm going to talk about a few books today and the making of, and I encourage you to ask questions. If any questions that you have as I go along, feel free to ask. Now, but I have a question I want to ask you guys. How many artists are here today? If you're an artist, raise your hand up high. Don't be shy. There you go. How many writers are here? Great writers. Oh, it's good to know. Any picture book writers here? Oh, my crowd. This is my crowd. Anybody write songs or poetry? Any poets? Okay. Well, you know, I often open up the dialogue with, you know, that kind of question. Does anybody know what a collage is? And I get all these types of answers, and that's correct. But sometimes it doesn't quite fully explain it. So what I would do is I say, well, everybody freeze, and what I would tell mainly kids, I would say, well, let's just make a pizza. I would say, stop the whole show, said, let's just make this pizza. And I would say, well, somebody name me an ingredient or a topping that goes on a pizza. I always end up at food somehow. I don't know why. So what goes on a pizza? Go. She said pepperoni, something else. More. Cheese, that's a good start. All the way in the back. Mushrooms, it's getting better. Banana peppers, that's even better. That's beautiful. Let's go. The dough, you mean like the dough, the crust. Okay, something else. Just a little bit. This is a good pizza, but it's not a fantastic pizza. I'm talking about your favorite ingredients now. Go, right there. Feta cheese is getting better. She's exotic. That's exotic stuff right there. Go right here. Pineapple, ooh, yeah. Everybody look this way. What about just a little bit of, it's for the taste, you know. It's just a little, oregano, come on. Basil, who said basil? Oh my goodness, okay, basil. We can do it. Just a little bit of, it's right on the table. We're at the pizza shop, you just get it. Red pepper flakes, the flakes, yeah, give them a little spice. Shaking on Parmesan and some right next to the Parmesan. You know it, it's right there. Garlic salt, come on. Okay, one more. Olives, okay. All right. Well, you see, we name all those ingredients that have nothing to do with each other until you put them together. They have no relationship, but you put them together. And I asked you, I said, well, why don't you pick your favorite ingredient? And you put it on and you make a pizza. The ingredient that you like as an individual. Making art and making a collage is just like that. It's about picking your materials and your colors, just the ones that you like. And you put them together because separate, they're just on the table. But when you put them together and you work it out and you put this color up against that color, then you have something brand new and exciting and dynamic. Well, that's what a collage really, really is. And it's as simple as that. I figured out how to make a collage based on the things that I figured out that I like for me. Now, we're going to get into some of the books, but I want to tell you, I lived in Harlem for over 20 years. And people would look at my artwork and say, well, oh, you must have been watching Romare Bearden and Jacob Lawrence and all those great collage artists. But it didn't happen that way for me. Because when I was 4, my grandmother made a quilt. She made incredible quilts, but I was just 4. And it was just colorful, and it went on the bed, and I didn't pay it any mind. It was just a quilt. But somehow, some way, that quilt got into me when I said I was going to be an artist. And I painted in oil, and I painted in watercolor, and I did all that stuff. But one day I said, I need something else. And I made a painting in watercolor, and I tore it all up, and I glued it back together. And something happened. So I've been making collages ever since. And it was, and then the big deal happened. The most miraculous thing happened. I graduated from Pratt Institute in Brooklyn. And I went home to Maryland. That's where I'm originally from, Maryland. And I visited home, and I saw my grandmother's quilts that she'd made when I was a kid. And I never thought much of that quilt or any of those quilts until I actually saw them over the holiday. And then I looked closer at the quilt. And what I didn't know when I was four is that she made little landscapes. It was in the details. She did landscapes. And I looked at my artwork, and I sort of did the same thing. And I didn't know what all this was until I looked at them together. And this is what I really want y'all to hear. What she did, she gave me a silent gift. She planted a seed. The quilts were the seed at four. It took years for it to grow into a tree, but the seed got planted. So from a quilt to a collage, you see the connection, right? Piecing things together with no relationship until you do it and it becomes something brand new. That's what I celebrate when I make the art for the books. Now, who thinks a picture book is easy to read? Oh, y'all scared. Come on, talk to me now. Who thinks it's easy to make? Okay, well, I'm going to tease all this out of y'all. I know y'all holding back. You're holding back. Well, I got into picture books because I had three books that I loved as a kid, and one was Snowy Day, Ezra Jack Keats, and Whistle for Willie, Ezra Jack Keats, and Harold and the Purple Crayon. Did y'all know I was Harold? Look at my head. When I was a kid, I had the same shape head as Harold, and I knew I was going to be Harold, and I saw myself in this book. And growing up on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, I know what a snowy day is. So when Ezra Jack Keats did that book, and I looked at Peter, and I'm the youngest of six, and I always wanted to play with the big kids, and so that book was just me. It spoke directly to me, and all the way down to the pajamas that kid Peter wore in the book, I had some similar to that. That's the magic of picture books. You never know who you're gonna spark or who you're gonna reach. So when I figured out that the real reason why I figured out why I wanted to make a picture book was because after I graduated from college, I walked into Barnes and Nobles and I looked in the picture book section and I didn't see that book like Snowy Day that where I saw myself in it or a kid that looked like me. So I said, as an artist, I'm going to make a book. And that's what I set out to do. Now, if you know anything about picture books, you know you may have a desire to make a book, but then what do you do next? It seems like nobody will talk to you about how to make a book or how to go to a publishing house or, you know, this was this incredible maze that I'm trying to figure out. So I went door to door in Manhattan. I went door to door for 7 years, and I dropped off my portfolio of artwork once a week for 7 years until somebody gave me a book deal. I went to the same publishing houses over and over, even the one that actually published me. They had to see me coming because I was dropping my stuff off every week. And this was the first book that was published. Uptown. The boy on the cover, that's my nephew. His name is Justin White. He was 8 when he posed for the book. He's 24. He'll be 25 this year. He posed for the book. And when they called me up to the publishing house, and they said, well, okay, we love your work, and we want to publish you. But there's one catch. We want you to write a book and illustrate it. So I didn't know what to do then. So she said, her name is Laura Godwin. She said, just write about what you know. If I came to you today, all you would be authors here and say, okay, we have a book deal for you. We want you to write the book. But write about what you know. Just tell me about you. You got to figure out, you say, my first question was, what do I know? And where do I start? And what is this picture book thing about? You know? So you figure all those things out, and that's just the work ethic. Any writer will tell you, it doesn't just flow. You got to work it and bang it together and hammer it and shape it and rework it over and over until it just feels it's ready. So it was the first book. It's called Uptown. And it's about my neighborhood. I knew my neighborhood in Harlem because I walked it and I painted murals all in Harlem. And I knew this neighborhood. So this is how the story goes. He says, Uptown is a caterpillar. Well, it's really the Metro North as it eases over the Harlem River. That's what he says. Just stay with me. Uptown is chicken and waffles served around the clock. At first, it seems like a weird combination, but it works. Uptown is a row of brownstones. I like the way they come together when you look at them down the block. They look like they're made of chocolate. Oh, yeah. Uptown is weekend shopping on 125th Street. The vibe is always jumping as people bounce to their own rhythms. Uptown is a stage. The Apollo Theater has showcased the greatest entertainers in the world. I hope we get good seats. It's all in the details. Uptown is jazz. My grandfather said jazz and Harlem are a perfect match, just like chicken and waffles. That's how it goes. Uptown is a barbershop. It's a place where last night's ball game could be more important than what style haircut you want. Uptown is a Van Der Zee photograph. I saw a picture from before my dad was even born, a picture of my grandparents' wedding day. Uptown is summer basketball at the Rutgers. Anyone can rise up and be a superstar for a day. Uptown is canvas awnings on the windows to block the sun. It's like the buildings are all dressed up. Uptown is little sisters. They're on their way to church in matching yellow dresses. Uptown is the orange sunset over the Hudson River. That means it's time for the street lights to come on for me to get home and get changed. Now, what is he getting changed to do? It's in the details. What is he getting changed to do? He said it's time to get home and get changed. Getting changed to do what? She said change into his pajamas. That's a great guess, but that is not it. It's time to get home and get changed. Simple picture book. The answers are in the details. Didn't he say earlier, I hope we get good seats at the Apollo? Uh-oh. Oh, my goodness. Uptown is a song sung by the Boys Choir of Harlem. Each note floats through the air and lands like a butterfly. The word butterfly is important there. Why? It's in the details. What was the first line of the book? Uptown's a what? What does the caterpillar and the butterfly have to do with each other? Uh-oh. What? What are you going to say?
A caterpillar turns into a butterfly. Okay. Uptown is Harlem. Harlem world. My world. Uptown's home. That's my neighborhood. So, that was the first book. And what it did is it sort of opened up a brand new world for me as an artist. Because there's so much to talk about in picture books. And I have a range of ideas and themes that I talk about in picture books. One of them was all the things that I'd heard as a kid historically, like my book on Dr. Martin Luther King. And I did a book on Rosa Parks as well. The Rosa Parks was written by Nikki Giovanni, and this was written by Doreen Rappaport, Martin's Big Words. Now, of course, you know who this gentleman is, right? Can somebody explain to me, when you open up a picture book on Dr. King, this is the first thing you see. Now, what is this? Stained glass windows. Now, what does stained glass windows have to do with Dr. King? What's the connection? What do you say? He was a minister. What else? It's something else. It's closer. It's just in the details. It's right there. It's storytelling. The first thing you see is stained glass windows. Look closer. Say it again. It's church. Look closer. Stained glass windows, Dr. King. It's right, it's full frontal. Uh-oh, we got superstar here. Different colors, Dr. King. What else? Expound on that. What do you say? The sun, the light. Okay, we got that. But I want to hit that color thing. Stained glass windows, different color pieces of glass to make one window. Dr. King's message is about different people to make one world, one universe. It's a metaphor for Dr. King's message, even before any of the book starts. The moment you put your hand on a picture book, it's already started. When you see it on the shelf in the store and you walk up to it, it's already started. The story has begun. It happened so fast, we put the title on the back. That's the thing that blows me away about making books, picture books, because there's so much you can talk about. Now, as an adult, my themes that ran in my head when I made Martin's Big Words were, here's a man that was well-educated, walking distance from his job, pillar in the community, just young, new family. He had a great comfort zone. And then he was asked to be a leader of the civil rights movement, which put him in danger. No comfort zone, put him on the front line. He sacrificed and served and served and sacrificed the whole game, the whole deal. And he went and he did it for us. That's what's astounding. That's what, in my head, that's what I'm thinking when I'm making a picture book for kids. All those heavy things about service and sacrifice and to save and to serve and to sacrifice everything. For it all. So that's what I feel about this kind of theme that I'm doing. And with Mrs. Parks as well. You can't talk about Dr. King unless you talk about Mrs. Parks. Because the bus boycott in Montgomery put a 26-year-old young minister on the front line. That was Dr. King. He was 26 when he started that. So the same type of thing. Service and sacrifice. Before I move on to the Dave the Potter story, anybody have any questions? I brought original artwork I wanted to show you from the books as well. So we can do that. This is from a book, Your Moon, My Moon, by Patricia McLaughlin. This is the size I work at. It's normally, I probably spend about 7 to 10 days on each piece of artwork. And it normally takes me about 4, maybe 5 months to do a whole book, because I'm constantly working and arranging and rearranging. And this is watercolor and collage. This is from the John Lennon book, John's Secret Dreams. That was a book I never thought I would do. You know, living in New York, it's hard to tell folks you're not a Beatles fan, you know. You got to be careful with that, you know. And but I really wasn't. I didn't really grow up on John Lennon's music or the Beatles, really. I was, you know. But the reason why I said, well, I really want to do this book is because this is John after the Beatles, and he seemed like he was alone, empty, and like broken, but he was still rich and very, very famous. And I said, well, how do you put those two together? And so I was traveling around the country talking about, you know, how that can very much be within the same person. Be a Beatle and be alone, empty, and broken. And it wasn't until he watered his spiritual garden, so to speak, when he started doing things for humanity, where he found clarity and some semblance of peace. And you know how the rest of the story goes. He was very, very young when it happened. And often I use either family members or friends to pose for the books. This kid, he lives in our cul-de-sac area. His name is Brandon. He posed for this book. Now, what's really dynamic about using real folks to pose for books, this kid grows up for his entire life knowing that he has a book that featured him when he was a kid. That's an amazing position to be in. That's legacy building. The same for my nephew, Justin. He grew up going to school trying to impress the girls with his book. You know, it's like, you know, all through high school and everything. It's like, dude, you know. But that's an amazing feat, and I'm really about that. How the story always stays alive when you use real kids to pose for the book. Because that's a story they'll always tell, their families will always tell, and it just expands it, and I truly, truly enjoy that. Oh, that's from Uptown. You can ask questions, it's okay, I'm really easy. Yes? How do I get matched up with an author? Well, my experience has been, at the publishing house, the editor sort of facilitates both. They have a story, and then they call me to illustrate it, and they put us together. And the editor sort of makes that decision. There's a book that I just did called Knock Knock. That didn't happen. What happens, I saw this monologue that this actor did on HBO, and I said, that's a book. And I took that story, and we got it published. So that's a rarity that happened. So that's how that sort of happened. But normally, the publisher facilitates that kind of thing. Okay, who's heard of Dave the Potter before? Well, somebody back there has, the bookstore owner. Well, before I got this story, I hadn't heard of it either. The author, Laban Carrick Hill, who wrote the story, he was watching TV, The Antique Roadshow. One of Dave's pots came up on The Antique Roadshow. He jotted it down and said, I'm going to write about it. He eventually did. Dave the Potter is about an enslaved potter 200 years ago wrote poetry on the clay pots he made on a plantation. 200 years ago. So Laban Carrick Hill wrote this text. It eventually got to me. The editor called me and said, we have a story we want you to illustrate. Could you read it and tell us what you think? I read it. I said, I'd like to know more. And so I eventually signed on for this particular project. And I started doing research. That's another thing as an illustrator. We have to do research. I want to do research. So research, the kind of research that a computer can't give me or a book really can't get me, I have to go to the location. So Dave was a slave on a plantation in Edgefield, South Carolina. It's about 45 minutes from Columbia. So I went down. I didn't know anybody down there. I went down and I actually went to the actual plantation. It's a stone marker. And I went and I walked into this little town of Edgefield. And someone directed me to this old potter, old master potter. His name is Stephen Farrell. They directed me to him and he told me all about Dave. He had three of Dave's pots in his studio. I had never seen the pot up close. I had seen it on websites and things, but I had never seen the actual pot, and I actually had a chance to touch Dave's signature. Dave the potter, that story is an amazing. You almost couldn't believe that it was true. So I went down, but before I did, I read this book called Carolina Clay. This author named Leonard Todd wrote a book about his hometown. See, Leonard Todd was at a exhibition in New England, and it was a pottery exhibition, and it was some of Dave's pots in this exhibition, and he saw the inscription Edgefield, South Carolina. Well, lo and behold, Leonard Todd, this white gentleman's from Edgefield, South Carolina. He became intrigued, so he did more research, and he looked into it, and he discovered that Dave was owned by six different plantation owners. He was bought and sold six different times. All of the plantation owners was Leonard Todd's relative. Let me do that again. Leonard Todd discovered that his family owned Dave. So he really got intrigued and he wrote this book, Carolina Clay. What he did is he painted a picture of the history of Edgefield, South Carolina. You discover that 10 governors came from this one little town in Edgefield, South Carolina. And this potter, this master potter named Dave, dwelled there as well. Now, Dave wrote poetry on these pots. But the astounding thing is, well, how did Dave learn how to read and write? It was illegal for slaves to read and write. Dave was owned by a plantation that had a newspaper press, and Dave was a typesetter at the newspaper press on one of these plantations. That's where I believe Dave was taught how to read and write. He was then later sold to a plantation that didn't pick cotton. What they did is they made clay pots. And they used these clay pots to store meat and grain and water and oil in. And farms and plantations from all over the country would come to the Carolinas to get these pots. They were sought after valuable pots because that's how they kept their harvest. This gentleman right here that looks like Santa Claus, his actual name is this Stephen Farrell. He's the actual master potter in Edgefield, South Carolina. He's the only person that's painted in real time in this particular book. So Dave was sold to this plantation that made clay pots. He was trained. He ultimately became this master potter, and he wrote poetry on the outside of these clay pots. And he wrote this poem, he said, and that we focus on in the book. He said, "I wonder where is all my relations, friendship to all in every nation." He signed it Dave, and he dated it, I believe, August 16th, 1857. He said, "I wonder where," and I read this in the text, he said, "I wonder where is all my relations, friendship to all in every nation." I had two questions. If Dave was born and he died in South Carolina, how is he talking about another nation? That's the thing that sort of bugged me. I said, he said another nation. Now, Dave made 40,000 pots in his lifetime. That's what the inventory at the pottery company had, 40,000. So when I say he made 40,000 pots, he didn't have time to rewrite and write and craft a poem and say, "Well, I'm going to put this on it." And no, it's still slavery. He still had to make these pots. And I had another question. I said, "Well, if it was illegal for slaves to read and write, how is Dave getting away with writing all this poetry?" I haven't quite answered that question yet. I said, "Well, maybe everybody else was illiterate." And they said, "Well, that's just crazy Dave scribbling on a pot." That's doable, you know. Or the pots that he made were so valuable, nobody paid attention. Because he didn't write poetry on every pot. He wrote them on some. And Dave knew what he was doing because there was a rebellion in South Carolina in which Dave did not write on a pot. Because he knew tensions were high. You have the Underground Railroad, you had runaways, you have always have been slaves that said, "Enough is enough." They agitate the system. This was Dave's act of defiance. He boldly signed his name, Dave, and dated it. He said, "I wonder where is all my relations, friendship to all in every nation." That's what he said. And I said, "Well, okay, another nation." And then I thought about what we always tell our kids. If you can read and write, you can go anywhere. And you can do anything. You can speak and expound on any subject. So the book is not just about American history or slavery or poetry or pottery. It's about literacy. It's the very thing we've been saying all along, but told in an extreme form. I could never see it from just reading the text or going online and pulling up websites about Dave. I had to go and stand on the ground that he walked on because I needed to see what the sky looked like that he walked under to tell the story. And of course, in my illustrations, I put little hidden messages. Can you see "Live Life" up there? And here's what happened in the middle of research. They said, "You know, Dave lost a leg in a train accident." I said, "Okay, nobody really, they're not going to believe this one." One, how does a slave survive an amputation? And then how does he make the big pots? See, after he lost a leg in a train accident, he made the 40-gallon pots. Do you know how heavy clay is? Who kicked the wheel? Because if you're a potter, you need both legs. You need one to kick the wheel and one for balance because you're working up high on the table. Who kicked the wheel? You know what they told me? They said they brought another slave in that lost his arms. So can you visualize this here? Two slaves. One with no arms and one with one leg making these big 40-gallon pots. Nobody's going to believe that. I painted Dave at the potter's wheel, and he has only one leg. But it's so subtle. You need to see it. This is done in watercolor and collage. And you see those hands? That's a real potter's hands making pots. I had, as a decision, I said I'd need a potter to make these pots. So the guy that looks like Santa Claus, and these are actually his hands making pots. He threw about 5 pots in front of me. And because I wanted to see him pull that pot up out of the clay like that. So all that's important visuals. That's the journey that I go on when I illustrate picture books. You never know what you're going to discover, but you need to be open enough to bring that information in. Even if it's late in the midnight hour when you're doing a book and you're almost done and something brand new, like, well, Dave lost a leg in a train accident, you got to know that has to go in to this text somewhere, somehow, to inform the text. Because it just speaks to the determination, the physicality, and the sheer bravery and courage of the slave named Dave. And we get glimpses of his world from 200 years ago in just the clay pots and in his signature, that he had the intuition and the artistry amongst all that was upon him. He was in shackles. He was a slave. But he still had the heart and the mind to create. And I have to believe that was his only glimpse of freedom when he was making those pots. So I was really attracted to this story as an artist, how you desperately find the glimpse to create, the small window to create. Questions? Well, it really starts with the text. And when I read the text, images sort of just flow out, and I just conjure up the image. Now, with this particular book, no one knew what Dave looked like. All I knew is this guy that was going to be Dave had to be physical, and because the art of making the pottery calls for that kind of strength and physicality. So that's what I knew, and based on the story, I just let myself be led by the story. No, we never really have any contact until it's done. Yeah, they write the text. Because I had this author, her name is Nikki Grimes. We did a book together. And she said to me, she said, I never really worry about what an illustrator does with my work, because anything that I want in a book, I'm going to write it in. So if the dress is purple, you'll see the purple dress girl walking. No. So that's the way she sort of handled it. I said, that's really the way you should, you know, because as an illustrator, I interpret those words, and it may not be your vision as the author, but I interpret those words, and what I try to do is just listen to the inflection and the flow of the word and the intent, and try to stand and reach for the authentic truth that's in the text. And it's the same way I did with Mrs. Parks and Rosa. I know what they told me when I was in the 5th grade. They said she was tired that day. Until I went down and met Mrs. Johnny Carr in Montgomery. And she was tired every day. There's nothing new about that day. You know, so I got a new perspective walking in Montgomery, seeing the bus and seeing all that history there, you know. So, questions? Absolutely. That's all, as illustrators, that's deadlines are the things that are over your head, you know. But as my approach to deadlines is, I still got to find the truth. I still got to find the essence and the joy and the wonder of the text. So however long it's going to take me to do that, then that's really my deadline. But I do respect a publishing house's deadline, and I try to meet it. Well, the process is I start with sketches on watercolor paper, and I'll do a painting, a wash or painting. And then I use old magazines sometimes, and I cut and glue and put that in. Then I'll paint over that for shadows and to sort of do it. And at some point, I'll cut parts of the piece out and create a new background and put it on. So it's just about cutting and piecing No rhyme or reason, no formula, just whatever feels right, and let it go like that. No, the research comes first, and then everything is, all my information back to my studio, and then we start making the book. And it's not over then, because there's times I brought the artwork into the publishing house, and there's 30 people that look at it, publishing house, and 29 said, we love it, and then the one says, wait a minute, what about that? Everybody has to agree for it to go, all 30. So I'm always on edge until everybody agrees, you know. And I'm fine with that, because even though it seems like that one is a pain, it's not, because that one idea could be the one idea that I need to make everything 10 times better. So I welcome something brand new coming into the room that can make it better. Yes. Well, there's a whole lot of ideas behind this one. The crucifix, the family tree. If you look closely at the tree, you'll see faces in the tree behind him. The jar grew so large, Dave could no longer wrap his strong arms around it. If he climbed into the jar and curled up into a ball, he would have been embraced. It's that whole idea of outstretched arms, outstretched spirit, family legacy, trees being embraced by the community, being embraced by the ancestors, that whole idea. And if you just cover up all the words and just look at the pictures, what I try to do is not repeat myself visually, so other images can sort of tell the story as well. And that open right there, that allows the reader to come in and interpret as well. To bring in, like, we all look at stuff and bring our own experiences in. You welcome that, because that means you look at the book 10 years from now and you're different. You'll see something different. I want you to see something different. I know I do, because I'm different, you know. From day one, and I look at books now, even the books that I did back 10, 13 years ago, I see them totally different. I read the words and they sound different, you know. So that was one of those images where it just came to do that. Yes. Well, when I first was asked to write, I was terrified, because it took me 7 years to get in the door. Now that's another setback, you know, I'm gonna do this. But then I was totally thrilled, because it was like they asked me to write it. It opened up a brand new door of creativity that I could use as well. It's definitely harder for me to write than to illustrate, but I'm writing again now. So if you go on YouTube and type in the name Daniel Beatty, who's heard of Daniel Beatty? Okay. He did this monologue on HBO called Knock Knock. It was the Russell Simmons Death Poetry Slam. And he was one of the poets that went up, and he did this monologue called Knock Knock. And I saw it. And it was so powerful that I said, well, you know what? That's a book. I didn't know Daniel. Dane was in New York. I didn't know him at all. And I saw this monologue. I said, let me give him a call. Let me hunt him down, give him a call, and see if he wants to make a book. And he said he did. But he said there were many people that had tried to do this book, get this book published, but it didn't happen. I said, let me try. I sent word to my editor over at Little Brown Publisher, and I said, look at this monologue called Knock Knock. This is what I want my next book to be. That was a year and a half ago. And that's what we have here. It's Knock Knock. It's about a little boy who plays this game called Knock Knock with his dad every morning. And then one day, the knock didn't come. Everybody that's read this book just came out in December 17th. The book didn't, he plays knock knock with his dad. He anticipates his dad coming through the door and grabbing him so he could jump up in his arms and say, I love you. That's what they did every morning. If you look closely at the wallpaper, you'll see elephants walking. Not in the text, but visually, that's what I put in. Then the knock never came. If you pay attention to the rainbow on the next page, and the knock never comes, then the knock never comes. The rainbow fell. That's his emotional state. It fell. And this boy doesn't know what to do. He goes to his mom. Now, you see this mother? How many mothers are here? Now, when a mother comforts her child, you know this saved about 3 or 4 generations of boys and girls when they are sad or destroyed. That's why, you know, most of my images are of women because of the power of just that hand of comfort. It could be grandma's hands, it could be mama's hands, it could be somebody's hands, but that woman saved this boy's life because his hero didn't come back one day and didn't come back and didn't come back. He didn't come back. His world sort of crumbled, so you see the buildings are shaky. It's his internal thing showing right here. So he decides to write his dad a letter because maybe he's at school and his dad comes home and they miss each other. But if you look at the calendar on the wall behind him and see all the red X's, they're all the days that he's been marking off for his dad to come home. So he throws this letter out the window. But wait a minute, he jumps on the plane and takes a ride looking for his dad. Oh, yeah. And he goes on this fantastical ride, and he rides over these buildings in the city. And if you look at the top of the building, you'll see faces on every one of those buildings. This boy is not alone. This is a universal story. Looking for dad. And those elephants show up. He says something like, Papa, come home because I want to be just like you, but I'm forgetting who you are. Yeah, it's heavy in the beginning. It gets heavy. And the airplane comes back into the room. The elephants are still marching on the wallpaper in the bedroom. And that's the little boy isolated. This is Daniel Beatty's life. And finally a letter comes from his dad. It's getting better. He says, Dear son, ask your mama to help you make those scrambled eggs that we love. Remember to do your homework before you watch TV. That's from his dad. And I'm sorry I won't be coming home. For every lesson, I will not be there to teach you. Hear these words. The letter from his dad. In the book, his dad was incarcerated. In the book that I illustrated, it's about any loss, whether dad doesn't come home or mom doesn't come home, or whether it was a divorce or death or incarceration. It's loss. And what happens to a kid when that much of his life is gone? The turning point of the story is this kid's going to make a beautiful life for himself in spite of the loss. That's the celebration. That's the joy in the morning that comes. See, this boy grows up. This image here is called Boys to Men. It's when he's in the mirror. He grows up into a full-grown man. And earlier in the book, you saw him play with those construction trucks. Well, he's a builder in the community. He has his own construction company. And he has his own family. The balloons represent the joy. The brilliant blue sky represents the joy, even in spite of the loss that he had when he was a kid. His own family. His own joy. His own party. They throw a party for him and surprise him with this gift in this box here. It's called Knock Knock. And it's inside that box is his dad's hat. And the last shot of the book is this boy grown into a full-grown man hugging his dad. But if you look closely, it's just a hologram. And the letters that have fallen from the sky, all the letters, all the things that he had said as a kid and an adult, and the hole that was missing, that couldn't be filled, all comes together in this particular one. Tough story to tell, but it's a story that had to be told. Because we all know the story. We all know what it means. Even though we have losses, we still got to make a beautiful life for ourselves in spite of. And that's a great way to talk to kids about it. In spite of whatever happens, you still got to make a beautiful life, and it's possible. Now, Daniel Beatty, they call him the next Sidney Poitier. The incredible actor. And here's the real thing that happened. His pop got out of jail within the last 2 years, and they're hashing it out now. This is called Knock Knock. It's brand new.